Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Well, a pleasant good afternoon to everyone, wherever you may be. I'm Michael Hinkson, and I am here hosting the webinar series we call The Accessibility Gap. And co-hosting and with me today is Josh Vazel. If I could talk straight, I'd be in good shape. Josh, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here today.
We're excited about this series of webinars because it talks about something that most everyone isn't addressing, and that is this concept of the accessibility gap. Last month, we did one, our first in the series, with Curtis Chung, who is a well-known assistive technology expert, a longtime consumer advocate, and we talked about the nature of the gap. And basically, what we discussed last month was that there is a very significant gap between, on the internet, what exists and the number of people with disabilities who can access what exists. And that gap grows wider every day as more and more websites are created that are inaccessible to those of us who happen to have a disability. The world, the industry, and most all of us are not doing anything to bridge that gap. And we thought that today, one of the main ideas that we can talk about and one of the main objectives we have is to make you aware that it crosses disability lines. It isn't just blind people, although we tend to be pretty visible at dealing with the accessibility gap because of the fact that we don't get a lot of access to content for a variety of reasons. But no one thinks about the fact that it goes further than that, and that it isn't just blind people. So Josh happens to be a quadriplegic, uses a wheelchair, and I mentioned last month, my wife is a paraplegic who uses a chair, but she doesn't have a lot of the issues that, say, Josh does, and Josh will talk about that. For my part, I have been blind my entire life. I have been using the internet since it's been around, have found some websites that work pretty well, have found a lot of websites that are not very accessible and don't work pretty well. And more recently, even finding that some of the websites that I can access, when people actually do the work of remediation of those websites, that is, they work to make them accessible, a lot of content becomes visible and usable for me that I've never been able to access and use before. And I'm sure that Josh also has lots of stories about that. So Josh, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? I think some of the people here know my story more than yours. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about you?
Thanks, Michael. So, hello, everyone. I'm Josh Vazel. So just to let you know about my journey, I grew up in Maryland and was an avid tennis player, loved all sports. And after my freshman year of college, this was back in 2004. I was on a family vacation at the beach and a wave picked me up, threw me over my boogie board and slammed me on my head. That day I shattered my neck. I was face down in the water, unable to turn over. And but luckily my friends saw me floating and they pulled me onto the sand. And that was the start of being a C4-5 quadriplegic. I'm paralyzed below the shoulders. So I use mouth controlled to operate my computer. I do have enough movement in my hand that I'm able to operate my joystick. I can't even lift my hand off my joystick. But that's my level of injury. But I never let my spinal cord injury or my unique abilities stop me from moving forward and continuing to wheel after my dreams. I ended up going to community college after my injury, then went to undergrad, and then went to law school and graduated magna cum laude without ever flipping a page with my fingers. Technology is pretty amazing. And I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today is how technology is advancing in beautiful ways to bridge the accessibility gap. I have a nonprofit called Determined to Heal, and we help simplify the transition for newly injured families through information, videos, through adventures. We just try to live with an adventure spirit, adventurous wheels, and, you know, keep moving forward. There's no point to really reinvent the wheel if others in the community can show you what's been done before you and give you ideas on how to customize your journey forward. Mike, thank you for letting me have an opportunity to speak.
Well, Josh, let me start by asking you a question, because I'd like to really hear it from your perspective. What do you feel is the accessibility gap? How would you break it down if you're dealing with it in terms of all of us?
I think the simplest way to think of the accessibility gap is we have accessible websites and we have inaccessible websites that exist. And the gap is, what's that divide? How is it growing? Is the gap coming closer together? Are you getting to put more inaccessible websites, or are there getting to be more accessible websites at any given moment? And unfortunately, the gap is growing in the opposite direction. Every single day, every single second, there's more inaccessible websites being launched than accessible ones. And it's not the direction we should be moving in. It's unfortunate, but so much of it is because so much of the content management systems that exist out there make it so darn easy to build websites no longer with manual coders that know how to build it right from the beginning. And right now, it's just anybody can go and plug in and pull over and build a website with a click of a button and not actually put in the accessible elements needed for people to explore, understand what's in front of them, and be able to really truly experience a web page as any person without a disability is experiencing it.
Let me add to that. The gap is not only in the actual fact that websites are inaccessible, and the number and to some degree the percentage of websites that are inaccessible is growing, but we have another gap, which is really what leads to the title of today's webinar, which is Different Disabilities, Same Goal. The fact is that while people are making their websites, and it, as Josh said, is becoming easier and easier to do, what we're not seeing is any major effort on any level to make business owners who make websites more aware of the need for accessibility. And we're not seeing those who really should be involved in addressing the issue, we're not seeing them increase awareness. Programmers aren't learning about access. The schools aren't training coders and programmers about access. The content management systems, the website creation systems, especially the ones that make it easy, like a WordPress or Site Builder and any number of other systems that are out there, they're not mandating access and they're not incorporating access right from the outset. And the reason is because of the real gap that exists, the awareness gap. There's not much of anything being done to address this whole concept of awareness. And that is what we really need to do. I don't think, and I'm sure Josh, you would agree, and I want to hear you and what you say about it, but I don't think that anybody really is malicious in their ignoring making websites accessible. They just don't know, don't you think?
Yes and no. I think there's many different sides of the coin of why people don't make their websites accessible. One is definitely an awareness issue. Before my injury, I really didn't know anybody with a significant disability. And, you know, my injury gave me a new perspective, a new way of experiencing the world, for me, a new way of seeing the world, and so many different things that I never knew or was concerned about. But a lot of the times it's, you know, as you're building a website, so much of the business world look at it like it costs me, you know, $100, $200 to build a website, and to make it accessible, it might cost me 10 times that amount or even more. And they make decisions on money, which, you know, in respects, it's, if it could be done right from the beginning, you wouldn't have that issue. Or if you rely on other types of solutions, that you can get it done in a much more financially feasible manner. But I think that so much of it, like you said, is basically not knowing, not being aware. But I think there's definitely a lot of different factors that contribute to why the internet is not accessible.
But I think that the majority of people, if they understood things like 20% of all people, or one out of every five persons in the world, has a disability, and most of them can't utilize the web the way the other four out of five can. If people who are creating websites understood that one out of five people aren't able to take advantage of their websites and thus do business with them, they would be, even if it's just a financial motivation, want to make websites accessible. But it still goes back to that level of awareness that they don't know that, and they don't know about accessibility. Most people don't. And unless they have direct interaction, they probably won't, until the time comes that disabilities truly become a topic that we are, as a society, willing to discuss and bring to the forefront. In the past several years, we've certainly heard a lot about diversity with issues regarding women, like women in Hollywood. We saw a lot of that dealing with the Oscars last Sunday, or different races and so on, and how all of that is changing, and that landscape is changing. But the landscape for persons with disabilities still is not, because the mainstream of society has yet to decide to make its mindset inclusive, that to bring all of us in. For whatever reason, it still is that way. And I think that's something that we need to deal with. And hopefully things like this webinar will help raise some awareness and find that more people will become aware, because I do think that mostly people, if they understand, want to do the right thing. The other part about it, Josh, is, as you said, it needs to be inexpensive and it needs to be easy to make happen. And the reality is that there are a lot of people who have found some pretty easy solutions that have made their websites accessible. They feel that it has. No one has objected to the website since they've put technology into play that makes their website accessible. So they're happy and they're able to go on and do their business. And of course, that works until something doesn't, like the website server goes offline or something like that, and then they don't have a website. Or it can be that somebody says, you know, I tried to do something on your website and I couldn't make it work. Can you help me with that? Or people will speak up and say, we have an issue. And then when that happens, the good website owners will address the issue, and hopefully that they have resources to make that happen.
Points about the fact that businesses just are not tapping into the disability community. If you have one out of five different potential customers that could potentially benefit and purchase or access the information on your website, why wouldn't you want to reach that audience? Like we're talking about billions of dollars of untapped customers that, because a website's not accessible, that they can't fully reach that audience. And you know, studies have been done over the years that the disability community is the most brand loyal community in the population in the entire world. Once we are treated properly and cared for and acknowledged, we go back and back as repeat customers to these businesses. And it's not only just us, it's our family members, it's our friends, because we speak about it. We talk about, yeah, we went to that place and treated us well. And we go back, and again, we invite people there. We let them know. We love being mentors to other community members.
So tell me, So tell me, why is there such strong brand loyalty when that happens?
Because if you look, you know, there's 350 million websites in the United States, or that's tapped in within the United States, but yet less than 2% of those websites are accessible. So just thinking about just businesses in general, when you only have a select few of businesses that truly speak and serve a community, you remember those and you go back to those because, you know, that's where you're going to get the best experience. You're going to get an experience with less struggles, less frustration. It's just going to be easier. And that's what customers want. And that's what persons with disabilities want. That's what anybody wants.
One of the strongest messages that any good salesperson learns is when you establish a rapport with your prospects and with your customers, when you get them to feel like you're speaking to them, not pressuring them, not just trying to, as a lot of people would say about used car salesmen, sell them, but you're speaking to them, you are concerned about them, they're going to pay attention to you. There's so many examples of that. If you deal with people in real estate, the good real estate agents will tell you that although we may have sold someone a house, the fact is that if we keep in touch with those people, if we know what's going on in their lives, even though they're not going to buy from us for a while because they're not moving, they'll refer other people to us. And when they do need to move, they will remember us and they will come back to us. And the reality is that works when you have that genuine concern. And the 2% of websites that are accessible are transmitting a message. We care. We are working to make ourselves available and accessible to you, whoever you are. And the result is we're going to be brand loyal. And we are brand loyal to those people that really touch us and talk to us. And that is, I think, one of the most important things that we as people discussing this today and people who create websites, and more important, the people who are going to be involved and the companies that are going to be involved in fixing websites, the most important thing they can know is it really is about the consumer much more than the business, because you may get a business as a customer, but ultimately it's about getting the consumer, the users of those websites, to both the accessibility that has been created and then obviously the products that you want. My favorite example that I came up with just on the spur of the moment once a couple of weeks ago is that you can have websites that people work on and do things with and supposedly make accessible. But if consumers have a problem with it, it's like cat food. If you are a company that manufactures cat food and you sell it to your customers, that's really great. But it only works until the cat tastes it. And if the cat doesn't like the taste of it, and if that tends to be a general consensus, you've got a problem somewhere. And until you please the cats, nothing's going to work. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So I think so much of having an accessible website just talks to, like you said, about caring, about respecting, about just inviting someone to have a seat at the table or to really open the door enough to let somebody in that might be peeking in because it's not fully accessible. And, you know, in order to truly experience a website, you need to experience all four corners of it. You need to experience all of the pages. If you can see the product, you can read about the product, but you can't check out and purchase the product, you know, that's just half of the picture. That's half of the puzzle. And, you know, that's the trouble. Some websites, you know, you just can't navigate the full thing without, you know, calling in a family member, a friend to help you get across. And to tell you the truth, not everybody has those people next to them to help them at any given moment. So it's making the website accessible is just so important. And right now, as the accessibility gap is going in the opposite direction, it's something that we need to do. And like right now we're talking about the issues, which is the first stage of understanding that there is a major problem. And then it allows us to figure out solutions on what we can do to bridge that gap and how we can work together as a united front to bridge that gap. And I would love to talk a little bit about how we've done this well in the past and how we haven't done it well in the past within the disability community. I don't know if that's
Sure. But before we do, can you maybe give us a couple of stories of your own experiences or what you've experienced or seen about people who have had real accessibility gap problems in your community? And then I'll tell a couple also.
Well, so too often, the way that I've seen this, experienced it, and just witnessed it from the history lessons of diving deeper into the law, into kind of the past, is that the disability community has always, or for the most part, been an afterthought. Products are rushed to market, industries are created, and the disability community is not thought of until years later, when we basically, let's say, with building a building, like before the ADA was existed, buildings were built, and you know, if they were built accessible, it was one thing. If not, you know, later on they would create a ramp to let somebody in. And probably the best industry right now that you look at it in recent years is the ride sharing industry, the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world. They basically came onto the market, crushed the taxi industry, which had regulations on accessibility, and then basically came into this new ride sharing world and had zero accessible vehicles out there for persons with disabilities. And it made it so hard to get picked up if you're in a manual wheelchair, and really almost impossible if you're in a power wheelchair. And now, as years go on, enough persons in the disability community have spoken loud enough, and enough things have been getting into the media. And now these companies are starting to say, you know what, we want to help this customer base now that we're being forced to. And, you know, we don't want to force businesses to do the right thing. But at the same time, it's the way it's been done over the years. And it's unfortunate. And as the accessibility gap becomes wider and wider, it's just, we need to keep the conversation going to let businesses know that they need to do this.
Yeah, that's a good point. And continuing with the rideshare example, I was one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit a few years ago against Uber, because Uber wasn't dealing at all with the issue of blind people with guide dogs traveling in Uber vehicles. Drivers would show up, discover it was a blind person with a guide dog, and drive off. And we didn't even know that they were driving off. Or if we did know, because they said, I'm not taking you because you have a dog and I'm not putting any dogs in my car. And they would drive off. Uber's response was, even at the beginning of the litigation, well, we don't have any responsibility in that because all we're doing is matching drivers and passengers. So we're not involved in that. Well, yes, they are. Their contract employees, the Uber drivers, were not letting blind people in with guide dogs, and the Americans with Disabilities Act specifically addressed that kind of a concept. So it took a lawsuit. And even now, with the lawsuit that was finally settled, there are countless cases of drivers with Uber and some with Lyft as well that continue to not accept blind people, even though, especially with Lyft, there's been a fair amount of training. I just read a situation last week where a woman, after the lawsuit, had over 18 or 20 different examples of where Uber drivers would refuse to take her, would send the information to Uber, didn't get very many positive results, filed a case, it went to arbitration, and she got over $1 million because Uber wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. So there is still a lot of resistance in the industry saying, you're not going to force us to do something that we don't want to do. And the reality is that shouldn't have to be that way, because there's no magic about a blind person and a guide dog that is well-behaved going on any or in any Uber vehicle, you know. And that is just as true with the internet. My example that comes to mind is when Target refused to deal with the internet and making their website accessible for blind people back in the early 2000s. And it took a lawsuit filed by the National Federation of the Blind and an $8 million settlement to get Target to finally address the issue. It wouldn't have cost anywhere near that for Target just to go off and make the website accessible, but they weren't going to be forced. And that's unfortunate because they were missing up to 1 out of 5 persons in the United States or in the world, if they're worldwide, being able to use the website. And I don't know whether Target has addressed the issue for all disabilities. And I think that's a very relevant point for us to deal with. Your website isn't accessible unless it's really dealing with all disabilities. It isn't just being blind. It isn't just dealing with what a person in a chair, a quadriplegic, has to deal with. Take a person with epilepsy and they go to your website and start to see a lot of different blinking elements on the site. That can invoke seizures. It's just as pertinent. Even persons who are deaf or are hard of hearing, oftentimes without having good captioning and without videos being captioned, can be a problem. For blind people, those same videos without audio descriptions of the videos, that can be a problem. There's a lot to accessibility, and it is something that we all do need to address.
Well, it's the unique functionality that you're saying of almost, you know, for each person with a disability, we're experiencing a website differently based on our unique abilities. I find it amazing that, you know, we have AI solutions now that can create profiles based on your functionality where you go to a website, where if you have epilepsy, you can click a button and it can turn off, you know, GIFs and other types of blinking lights. Or if you have a cognitive disability, it can make that information that's on the page easier to absorb. Or if you have a quadriplegic, you can use keyboard navigation to be able to get through all the dropdowns and get through all the different parts of the page. And for the blind community, it has so many different integrations with JAWS and screen readers and other things of the sort. The biggest thing that, you know, we have the ability now through technology to have a united front on how we can come together to make websites accessible. Too often, if you look in the history, and just I see it, I live outside Washington, D.C., and when I go to Capitol Hill to advocate, it's always every unique disability group advocating for themselves and having a fight with legislators, please help us. But what too often doesn't happen is that we have a united front of all disability groups coming together for, you know, a mission to make a particular thing accessible. And I think that's what we need to change with the internet. Like, we are going in the wrong direction when it comes to the widening gap. And the only way to bridge it is if we all come together, persons with disabilities, unique populations of persons with disabilities, persons without disabilities, people that are manual coders, people that are in the artificial intelligence world. The more and more people we come together in the business community, we all unite under a common mission to make the internet more accessible. And we can do beautiful things together if we do that. But the trouble is, how do we get messages like we have in today's webinar out to the world to start a movement, to get people involved, to get people to have a call to action? And I hope we're starting that right now. And I know other people have chimed in about this in the past, but we just got to keep having this conversation.
And, you know, it is true that people with different disabilities do have, in some senses, different needs. And there's relevance in advocating for specific needs, but there are also areas of commonality. And it would be very difficult to imagine that the reality of making the internet accessible for you is really different than making it accessible for me. It's all about access. It's something that we all should work on together. And we need to get more business owners and more of the companies that are involved in making the internet accessible to work together. There's not just one way to make the internet accessible. There are some who say that. There are some who say the only way to do it is you got to code it. You got to do it right by hand. There are those who say the only way you're truly going to make it happen is if you start with accessibility right from the outset. Well, that's definitely true. That is, if everything were such that you could not create or publish an internet website and content without ensuring its accessibility because the technology demanded it, then a lot of things would go away and there would be access. But the reality is that's not working for us. So the ideal is a wonderful thing, but it is an ideal and it isn't something that anyone is going to make happen in the near future. So you do have a lot of different other kinds of alternatives and aspects that need to be addressed. So the fact is that whether it's being done through artificial intelligence or whether it's being done through manual coding, the goal is the same. The results will be the same. And the need, certainly, that is the need to make websites accessible, is the same. And the reaction, the reality is it should all be a unified front. You know, we'll see. Maybe things like the World Wide Web Consortium will recognize that. And that is, of course, where a lot of the standards come from. And I guess it's relevant that we talk about standards just a little tiny bit. That is to say, there are standards, there are guidelines, well, not so much standards today as guidelines that say this is what you need to do to have a website be accessible. And those generally rely on putting in codes and doing the website accessibility remediation through a coding process. But that doesn't work because it's a one by one kind of a solution. That is, you've got to do it to each website. Well, now we're finding that some companies, and I will mention Accessibe is the one that I know of. Of course, I'm a little bit, I won't say biased, but oriented toward Accessibe because I've seen it. But the fact is, artificial intelligence is a solution that will help make websites accessible. It's doing it. And that makes perfect sense because artificial intelligence is all around us in the world, whether we happen to have an Echo from Amazon, a Google Home, whether we have technologies that use other ways of interacting with the internet. We have Netflix and other websites that use artificial intelligence to talk about our shopping habits. For heaven's sakes, Apple just updated their iPhone iOS software because Apple felt that there were too many websites or companies that were invading the privacy of users and looking at what they do and using that to customize advertising. That's AI, right? So it is all around us, but we all could work together and we all could resolve and solve pretty quickly this accessibility gap, don't you think?
Working together is basically everything you said is we have to have many different pieces of the puzzle in order to do this. We can't just have one piece of the puzzle and expect the whole picture to come out. But with that being said, I'm a big believer, you know, my world as a quadriplegic, if it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, the difference in my life has always been technology. Mm-hmm. Technology changes everything for someone that is paralyzed below the shoulders. And when it comes to the internet, I think we're getting to a point where because of artificial intelligence solutions, we now have scalable ways of really attacking the accessibility gap in ways that never existed before. And it's only going to get better as we invest more time, resources, and energy, like you said, into artificial intelligence, machine learning, all these other components that where we can break down those accessibility barriers with either just embedding a specific piece of code that ends up going over the website behind the scenes with computer software, like the manual coding. Yes, if you can do it right from the beginning with manual coding, that is an awesome option. But the second that you update that website, you have to go back and make sure that it's accessible again. Because if you don't have that accessibility element in for updated information, you know, you're closing the door slowly and slowly on that website when it comes to accessibility.
And that's part of the challenge that a lot of businesses have is that the only way to do that if you're coding is you've got to keep someone on retainer. And if we use the last year as an example, the pandemic has made that all the more difficult because the money just isn't there to do that. But even in a non-pandemic time for smaller businesses that want to create accessibility, if you have to keep someone retained, that's going to significantly eat into your profits should you do it? You got to find a way to keep the website accessible. But remember, part of the justification is that you're going to have a lot more potential traffic going to your site. And if you start to tell people, hey, my website's accessible, come and see me, people who come and discover that will, because of that Nielsen study that we talked about earlier, will be brand loyal. I can tell you from a personal experience, that's always going to be the case. And I've been in sales and marketing since, well, literally since 1976, but even before then. I've been in sales my entire life because as a blind person, I've had to sell just to convince people to let me take my guide dog somewhere long before the ADA. I've had to sell in so many ways. All of us have. Josh, you've had to sell to convince people. And as a lawyer, you're always selling. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You are arguing a case as a sales presentation in a broad sense.
And for me, it's always advocacy. It's ever since my injury. So when I was first injured, I was on a ventilator for 5 weeks and wasn't able to speak a word. I was only able to blink with my eyes to communicate with my family. And ever since that day that I got my voice back, I promised myself I would never be silenced again. So I've exercised my vocal muscles, my advocacy with my mind to make sure that every word counts. And so much of what we're doing right now is figuring out how can we advocate for a more accessible internet? And we because we live it, because we speak disability, we understand what we need to do to make this possible. And we need to do it together. We need to have actual solutions that are scalable. And we need to attack the 350 million websites that exist right now to make them accessible. It's not going to be an easy feat, but the if we don't do something about it, it's just going to get wider and wider. And that scares me.
And it's 350 million, by the way, and growing. And that's, of course, the issue. I'm on some email lists. I've got to cut down on the number of unsolicited emails I get, but I'm seeing a number that talk about how Amazon is changing the way it operates. And so join this webinar to learn how you can set up a sales system with Amazon and sell products on Amazon, even if you don't have your own, or how you can set up a system to do this or that or whatever. All of those are websites. And all of those websites come without any specific process of making them accessible. So Shopify is a major marketing system that's out there, and you can get a website set up on Shopify, but the basic Shopify system doesn't in of itself create real accessibility. A website might be usable because the words are there, although we may or may not be able to see the pictures. One of the interesting things about Shopify, having looked at it from the viewpoint of accessibility, is that there is someone who has put something up that says that if you have a Shopify website, here's how you can put accessibility on it. Whether it's accessibility or something else, the bottom line is we mostly aren't paying attention to it still, and that's the gap, and it's going to continue to grow.
Well, I think that this year alone with the pandemic just shows how much we rely on the internet to access the world. We've all been stuck in our homes for so long. Can you imagine, you go to persons with disabilities, let's say, everybody that doesn't have a disability, and you gave them the problems that we faced with internet accessibility, there would be outrage. People would be so mad that they couldn't access the world. And the fact is that, we've had to live this year with a lot of this inaccessibility, and it's getting wider. I think the pandemic is one of those moments in time that it's going to push persons with disabilities to realize that if we don't do something now, we're going to, I want to say too late, because I think as technology advances, more mm-hmm. and more breakthroughs can happen, but this is the time to do something about it.
Research in Motion was a company that invented the BlackBerry. And I don't know how familiar you are with the BlackBerry, but there was one night when their servers dropped and people went 12 hours without being able to use their BlackBerries. And I heard and read reports about how people panicked. They couldn't get anything done. And it was a night, by the way, here in the U.S. Some people committed suicide over it. A lot of people were very stressed because their access to the world as they viewed it was gone. And it can happen in so many ways. For us, the access is gone a lot most of the time. And what we're saying is, let us be part of the solution. Let us be invited to the party and let us have access. We want to help you make it happen. We're not trying to abuse anyone, but no one should resist the concept of trying to bridge the gap.
Absolutely. And so right now we're about 45 minutes into
the webinar.
And I would love for our participants, the people at our webinar party, to ask any questions so we can keep these conversations going. So please go to the chat and let us know your questions and we can.
So guys, we already have a few questions that we can definitely attend to.
Let me before you start, we started about 3 minutes late, so we'll go until, I'm on the West Coast and Josh is on the East Coast, so we'll go to 103 or 403 or where Gil is, it's later than that. Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, we'll start.
Thank you for being here, Gil, and for staying awake for us.
For sure. It's my pleasure. So we'll start and say that because there were a few people who were asking if we're going to publish this or archive these recordings. So we'll definitely do using our social assets. Yeah. So the first question we got from the audience, is there a cookbook that defines the necessary accessible elements for a variety of categorical disabilities?
There is, and Josh can add to it. But again, the World Wide Web Consortium has created guidelines and things that it says needs to be involved in an accessible website. I want to, though, say that those standards don't guarantee accessibility. That is to say, accessibility goes beyond whatever guidelines that are created to talk about how to code a website, how artificial intelligence can make a website accessible. The fact is, a website is accessible if ultimately it is fully functional and usable. And so one of the examples I would give is, I have a website, and I think I gave this example last time, but it's worth repeating. My website was updated late last year now, actually in August or September. And when it was updated, it was done by a person who I discovered didn't really have a lot of expertise in accessibility. But he updated it. There were images on the website. There were other things on the website. And one of the specifics on the website was pictures of me and my guide dog, Roselle, who you can, for those of you who can see it, Roselle is behind me over my right shoulder. Roselle and I were in the World Trade Center on September 11th, and we escaped. I was the Mid-Atlantic region's sales manager at the time for a company. And artificial intelligence, when we brought Accessibe on board, artificial intelligence interpreted that image as man in black suit hugging yellow Labrador retriever, which is correct. That's exactly right. But that's not really saying what that image is showing that I would want people to know. What I want people to know is Michael Hinkson hugging Roselle. And you know, the process will continue to improve, but the standards would have said that the alt tags were put in and the image was described, even though it's not what I would want it to be. So there are standards, and Josh, if you want to talk about that, but I'm just saying it does go beyond the standard as well.
So I think you answered that very well, Michael.
Great. So Michael, okay. You talked about the person who created your website, and this is a great segue for the next question. Who do you think should be responsible of the accessibility of the website? Is it the website owner or the person or the agencies that creating the website? And how can you know if your website is accessible or not?
In my opinion, I firmly believe we all need to be accountable. Mm-hmm. If you're a website owner, if you run an organization, if you run a business, you need to understand all of your consumers, and you need to serve all of your consumers. So just because, so at any given moment, you're always thinking about all these different demographics that you're serving. And if you end up forgetting one of those demographics, you're losing out. And I think the responsibility has to be on those that can be held accountable with the decision makers. And, you know, as a decision maker, you need to take the extra time to dive deeper into making sure that your business is reaching the max number of people. And so that's my opinion to that, Gil.
Yeah, I think ultimately speaking, if you're going to do an ultimately speaking, it would be the website owner. That is, they're responsible for their website and they should be obligated to make sure that their website is accessible. So I think in one sense, they're responsible, but I am also with Josh, we're all part of the solution. So when we discover websites, we should contact the owner. And I want to comment on that statement in just a second, but we should contact the owner and say, you know, your website is not accessible. The reality is a lot of us who have disabilities, who are in the community of persons with disabilities, we know enough to suggest places to go or what you need to do. We can introduce website owners, and I think that they should be responsible for making the website accessible, but we can help with that.
Good point there, Michael. It's, you know, it's not just the accountability of the website owner, but us as a community to have that conversation to let them know when it's not. Because it's just, you know, I was on a friend's website the other day and I saw a few broken videos. You know, until he or she knew that those videos were broken, it was going to go undiscovered until that owner stumbled upon it themselves. So I think having that discussion about accessibility, you know, brings accessibility to light. And people start making it a point to do it.
I absolutely agree. And I think that the companies that are involved in website access need to, in making websites accessible, need to be part of the solution in a general way. And certainly different companies are going to promote their products. But I think they should also provide people with just general conceptual articles, general conversations, discussions about accessibility. And yes, we all promote our own products, but you know, there are a lot of colleges and universities in the United States, for example, and in most countries, and we compete for students in our colleges and universities. But what we don't see is by and large colleges and universities saying, well, anybody that goes to this kind of school is really going to a scumbag organization. Maybe they do it and I haven't seen it, but the reality is that colleges and universities promote their programs, but they generally tend to do it in a positive way. And they don't deny the fact that if somebody goes to another school, unless it truly demonstrates that it's not a good school for all sorts of reasons that we don't need to go into here, but unless they demonstrate that, then the fact is we all need a college education. And the first thing colleges and universities will tell you is you need a college education, which is of course what they're promoting. And they'll say, even if you don't go to Harvard, but you go to the University of Southern California, that's a good school. And so, sorry, we didn't get you. We think that we're better, but you went there, you're still getting a college education, and that's important.
Moving forward to the next question, can you provide some examples of websites in the 2% who are doing this well?
Gil or Josh, do you want to, or?
I think, yeah, I'd like to see how.
Okay. I'm going to send people to the Accessibe website because there are a list of sites that they use or that they have remediated, and you can go there and see them. I'll name a few. Oreo.com, which is the company that makes Oreos. Energizer, the battery company. I learned last week that the Los Angeles Lakers store, LakersStore.com, is accessible. You can go to any of the consumer organizations like the National Federation of the Blind, they have not used Accessibe, but they have made their website accessible to a good degree, although there is more work that can be done to do that. There are a number of sites that are out there. By the way, if you want to know, and I think you asked this, Gil, if you want to know if a website's accessible, you can go to accessibe.com, www.accessibe.com, where you will also see something mentioned called ACE. ACE is a free website audit tool, and there are a number of them out there, but ACE is a free website audit tool that you can use, and we'll ask you to type in a website name, and then it will audit that site and tell you, based on the World Wide Web Consortium guidelines, the Web Content Accessibility guidelines, and so on, it will tell you how accessible that site is. And so that's another place to go to look at whether a website is accessible or not. But ultimately speaking, what you can do is to go visit a website and see how usable it is. And the how usable it is needs to include, if you're blind, for example, the things that you don't see. And even though you don't know about them, that's where programs like ACE can help. And you can learn about them. There are so many examples of people who thought their websites were accessible and didn't do anything. But as I said, they don't do menus, they don't do image descriptions, and they don't do other things that give us the information that we need to have.
With that in mind, I see a question from James that the vast majority of 350 million websites are small businesses or smaller. What tools can those small businesses and nonprofits use and survive the costs? So I know for small
you know what I'm going to say.
For small Go business ahead. Purposes, yeah, Accessibe provides the services at a much, much lower rate than manual coding. The thing I love about the nonprofit of that is that Accessibe has said that they are going to provide the Accessibe services 100% free for nonprofits. So for like my nonprofit, I was able to get it up and running for free, and which I'm now loving so much. So all the nonprofits, it's just sharing that with your communities that this exists for them is an incredible to make it accessible.
I'm on the board of a nonprofit that added Accessibe independent of me to their website about a month ago. Accessibe has also said that if anyone knows or is involved with a COVID-19 site, especially vaccination websites and so on, that Accessibe will provide its product free of charge to any COVID-19 site. And Kaiser Health News, or Kaiser Health Net, did a survey a couple of months ago. They surveyed 94 websites that were related to COVID. 10 of them had some amount of accessibility and the other 84 did not. That's not what should be going on, especially when, among other things, government agencies are supposed to know about this stuff.
It's really scary that during COVID that you're not allowing or making sure that your website is accessible before you make it go live. That just does such a disservice to persons that are the most vulnerable to COVID. And that, you know, it's, in my eyes, it's life or death. And if you don't have the ability to get that vaccine or delay that vaccine, that it's so terrifying.
Yes.
How do you think COVID has affected accessibility, especially with the rise of CFS, ME, long COVID, resulting in more disabled people?
Well, I think that answers part of it. If as more people become persons with disabilities in one way or another because of COVID, they may, depending on what has happened to them, need to have website access that they don't have today. We have seen some companies respond really well. Zoom, for example, and I don't know when it first started, but when Zoom became very popular, it became visible that Zoom actually has an access team. And whenever something is reported to the team that is not accessible with Zoom, they jump right on it. And I've seen fixes to accessibility issues within a matter of even just a few days. One came up last week regarding a keyboard command to start a meeting and it's been fixed. It was an access issue. There was a button, there was a key command to utilize that became broken. It's now been fixed. So they've been great at responding. I don't know of any other companies that have put that level of commitment into the process, but it is something that all companies should do, especially large companies. For small companies, if you rely on Accessibe, for example, reporting to Accessibe helps because Accessibe will address it or let you know that it's not an Accessibe issue or what they can and can't do and so on. And I think it's all about response. So the companies that are going to succeed are the ones that are truly responding ultimately to the consumers. And I think we have maybe just about, well, 3 minutes. So do we have another question?
Yeah, just one more for a symbolic way to sum up this webinar. So you mentioned at the beginning of the webinar that there are 350 million websites out there and only 2% of them are accessible. So how optimistic are you that there is a true chance to close the gap?
There absolutely is a true chance to close the gap. By the way, that 350 million is in the US alone. I think the estimate is something like 1.5 billion worldwide, and it continues to grow. And I want Josh to answer as well, but absolutely there are ways and there is a chance to bridge the gap. Accessibe says that they want to work toward getting the internet completely accessible by 2025. Great goal. And I believe that the commitment of the company is genuinely to make that happen. I know that there are many other people not related to Accessibe who also want to make the internet accessible. And the fact that there are people who want to do it in and of itself means there's a chance. So we just need to find ways to work together and collectively make our voice a much stronger voice.
Just investing energy and time into scalable solutions. And the reason why I emphasize scalable is because the gap is so darn large. If you go in and expect to bridge that gap just manually, we don't have enough skilled people that know how to do this. And the ones that can do it are incredible at what they do, but there's just not enough of them. There's not a big enough army. But from a scalable solution with technology, having the software be your army just makes it that much easier to bridge that gap. So I'm really investing my heart, energy, and time and ability to advocate for continuing to strengthen the AI solutions that we have. And they will get better and better as time goes on, which excites me so much.
Josh, I want to thank you very much for being part of our discussion today on the accessibility gap, bridging the gap, and different disabilities, same goal, because I think we've demonstrated as vividly as we can, it is the same goal, and that we all can work together to find a solution. We just need to have the commitment and the drive to do it. We will be holding more of these webinars, and we will make sure everyone is aware of it. If you have more questions or want to communicate, you're welcome to email me. I'm easy to reach. It's michaelhi@accessibe.com, michaelhi@accessibe.com. You can also go to my website and reach me through that, michaelhinkson.com, or you can go to web to Accessibe and send emails through the contact process there, and they'll reach. We do want to hear from you. So I want to thank you all for being here and helping us bridge the accessibility gap. You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset Podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhinkson.com/podcast. Michael Hinkson is spelled MichaelHinkson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibe, and is sponsored by Accessibe. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.